Okay, so we are down to the last three classes, and this week's two classes would be about information integration, which is the last major topic in the course. And then next week we have one class. I'll probably use it for anything that's left in terms of the information integration discussion plus conclusions, I mean reviews. Okay, that's where we are. All the homework problems that would be given by Thursday, so basically by this weekend, and then they'll be due on Tuesday's class. Okay, there is going to be at least one on the information integration, and yeah. Question. What? Did I say it was due on Thursday? No, yeah, it has to be. It's due on the last day, I think, basically, because I probably won't be done. But don't expect them graded and gotten back to you for the final exam. Okay, it'll be due on the last day. Other questions? No. Most likely it'll be in class. There's an in-class time for it, and I'm also contemplating doing it closed book. Okay, so that it'll all be in your head for at least 1 microsecond of your life, and then you lose it. Okay. Yeah. I don't think open book really helps. I mean, you people will spend time trying to read it at that point of time. I think it makes much more sense to say it's closed book up front, and then you learn whatever you learn, you know, before you come to the exam. Okay. Any other question? Okay. Two things. There would be one of the homework questions would be a stylized question, where you will be asked to post your own review of the course onto the blog. Okay, and that would be used in the last class. Okay, so basically I'll tell you, it's not going to be pages and pages of writing. It's just you write down, I think, 5 topics that caught your attention and 5 topics you felt we wasted our time learning. Okay, and then you all put it up on the blog, and also give me in the homework solutions. And then that would be available on Tuesday when we come to the class, and then so that would be already a review. Okay, so if there are topics that are not appearing at all there, that means nobody understood them, or nobody hated them, which is the worst. I mean, hating something is good, loving something is good, being indifferent is the worst. You know, that means you didn't even know they existed in the world. So we'll see what actually went through. So that's going to be one of the questions, so you can start thinking about that. Any other questions? So there's going to be, actually Garrett gave me the demo schedule to sign up. Currently he's setting it up for Monday and Tuesday, and I forgot to bring the sign up sheet. I will do it on Thursday, and then you will basically sign up for a slot of time. As far as I am concerned, it doesn't have to be Monday, Tuesday. It's okay with me if it is Wednesday, Thursday. Do you guys care? Nobody cares, so it'll be Monday, Tuesday. Okay. So I will get the sign-up sheet on Thursday, and I'll send it around, and then you can sign your times for that. So if there are no other questions, then I forgot to bring my nice pointer, so I have to use this ugly one. I don't know if I'll know how to do it, but we'll see. So already I don't know how to do it. Forget it. Okay. I'm just going to use this way. And even that doesn't work. Okay. So we are basically going to be talking about information integration. It's based on a tutorial that I and Craig Nabla gave on 2007. It's available from my homepage. I'm only going to basically pick up the part of the tutorial, the information integration that we haven't already covered here. Okay, so there are other pieces that, in fact, the ones that Craig did, that I won't be discussing here, but you're welcome to look at the slides and listen to the audio if you're interested. I will tell you what you're missing and which parts we have taken care of, but I'm not going to do the entire tutorial in the class. Okay, that's just to give you an idea. But it's coming from there, and then it's been changed a bit. So the idea of information integration is that you are trying to combine information from many, many sources on the web to answer queries. That's basically the idea. Okay. So there are many applications for that. You can presumably have lots and lots of applications. There are lots of information sources. You can combine what they are saying, aggregate them, or take the information from here, plug it into this source, take the answer from there, plug it into some other source. These are two different kinds of integrating the information. In one case, you're just basically, for example, getting the prices of a book in various online shopping stores. Okay, so that with hopefully the interest being you want to know who is selling it for the cheapest price. Okay, in another case, you might find out the geocoding of a location and then plug it into something else to find out the weather for that location, for example. Okay, in one case, it's sort of horizontal, you're sort of doing joining of multiple sources. In the other case, it's sort of vertical in the sense you are aggregating information from multiple sources. And in general, you might have both connected. And so of these, for example, the comparison shopping is more like aggregation. Okay, so you're taking information from multiple sources, all of which have the same sort of a schema, and then you're trying to aggregate information from them. Okay, something like mashups and service composition, which are also examples of information integration, they are more join-oriented. So you're taking something from one source and then plugging it to another source. Okay. There are applications for that in of course web itself. There's also a lot of interest in scientific informatics. By the way, I think Pat Langley is teaching a course called Science Informatics next semester, if I remember correctly. Presumably he'll do some of this there, but essentially there's data, for example, biological data in multiple different sources, and you might want to combine them to answer queries. Okay. And then of course there's also the companies, many companies will have multiple databases with differing schema, and you may want to answer a query, you may have to put together multiple databases. Okay, normally these kinds of things are done, but by people do it. Okay, so they will actually manually plug in the data into one source, input into one source, take the output, plug it into another source, and so on. Okay, part of what we're trying to do is to see if this can be done automatically and, what are the issues in doing it automatically. Now, again, this topic, just as information extraction can be a semester-long course, information integration can also be semester or two-semester-long course. Okay, I'm just trying to do it in 2 days, two classes. So mostly I'm going to give you an idea of the types of challenges that you will encounter, and then give you answers for some of the challenges, not anywhere near all of them. Okay, so the one interesting thing is that lots of people say the phrase information integration and mean completely different things, and it's worth keeping in mind that at least three different communities sort of try to own this area, information integration. Okay, there is the database view. So database people obviously think that there are multiple databases and you need to combine them. Okay, so those of you who heard of distributed databases, for example, how many of you have heard of distributed databases? So what's the difference between distributed databases and what we are trying to do? What? So somebody is in charge. Okay, it's distributed databases, but the distribution is done centrally. When somebody decides, if you replicate data, you know exactly where you put copies of it. If you put this relation of the total schema in this database, you know that beforehand. Okay? So somebody is in charge. It's like the word distributed is sort of a misnomer. I mean, it is distributed. The databases are physically distributed, but they are actually centrally organized by somebody. Okay? So from that point of view, in the database community, there's another word called federated databases. okay, whole bunch of databases forming a loose federation. Nobody owns nobody. Okay. In that case, it starts coming closer to what we are trying to do, information integration. So in essence, the databases can be autonomous, and they have to have some structure. If you're a database person, you would hope that there's structure. And then if you assume autonomous databases with structure is already available, then the problems you're going to focus on would be making sure that the schemas, you know, even if you have structured databases, they might have differing schemas. So you need to map the schemas so that you will have, you'd say author here is the same as writer here, for example. So you need to do the mapping of the schema. And then you, given a query, you need to reformulate the query into individual queries onto individual sources, and then collate all the answers and give the answer back. Okay, so in data integration, there's a word called data integration, which is sort of related to information integration, and that sort of refers to this side where most of the action is on these challenges, because you assume the data is already in structured format. You might also be thinking from the IR NLP view of information integration, okay, and what they will say is really there is no databases in the world. We need to make databases. Okay, all you have is English text, and you need to use information extraction to get the structured data, put it into a database, okay, and then start querying. Okay, this is, so there, if you do that, the main things that they're going to be focused on first, before they go anywhere else, is information extraction. Convert text into structured data. Okay, I would say that after they do this, in some sense, they still have to do this. You understand? I mean, both of them are required, but people who think, from information integration to the website, get busy just doing this, because this is a pretty hard problem in itself. You know, taking text and converting it into structured data is already hard. And if you are converting it into structured data, then there are really no multiple sources. You can put all of them into one single source yourself. You can decide what the schema is. In which case, information integration here would be information extraction followed by a single database on which you do query processing. Okay? If you are in this scenario, you have multiple databases which already existed. Okay? You can still do this, but to do that, then you have to take all the data into a single central warehouse. That's the data warehouse approach. Put them into that warehouse and then do querying on that. We will talk about that, but more likely what you would want to do is leave the sources where they are, because in some cases you can't actually bring all the information from the source into a local repository. So for example, online sources, right, especially if the data is changing, if you want to provide, if you want to provide the latest information about the book prices, you have to go to Amazon and to Barnes & Noble and to whatever half.com and find out what their current book prices are. Where else do you do this kind of comparison shopping right now? You all know another very well-known example of this kind of comparison, online comparison shopping, which is pretty much the first thing that ever happened. Have you ever flown? Flights, right? Expedia, whatever the other guys, the Travelocity, Expedia, Orbitz. Now what's interesting actually is that the way Expedia, Orbitz, and Travelocity work, they don't actually call individual airline sources. Airline industry has standardized itself much before web came along, because they had travel agents. Okay, so there is a single database called Sabre database, which essentially I think American Airlines and United Airlines have come up with for the schema for that. And everybody who ever wants to send, who is flying and who wants to sell airline tickets would basically put all their information into the Sabre database. Except one particular airline that all of you know, Southwest, right? That's the only one which says, you have to come to our place to find out our prices, okay? Now, interestingly, actually, Southwest came towards the end of the travel agent-oriented ticket buying. Okay, but it's sort of, you could do that if the industry standardizes itself. You could also have, a Sabre for booksellers, such that all the online booksellers would put their prices in one place. In general, there's really no advantage for the seller to do that. Okay, because when they do that, actually they'll, you'll find out what is the cheapest price right away. Okay, whereas if you are, if you get into that particular site, at least you might like the look and feel of it and spend more time on that site. Okay, so it's kind of interesting that in the travel scenario there was a standardized database, but in the online shopping scenarios you still have to do this kind of, you know, this sort of a, keep the sources separate, do the schema mapping and query reformulation and query processing yourself. Okay, and then there is sort of in between scenarios, web services oriented view. I won't go in too much into it, but if you understand these two extremes, I think it's sort of more useful in understanding the differing views on information integration. One which focuses on the information extraction, one which focuses on the query processing and query reformulation. In the final analysis, you need both, but you know, depending on which problem, you know, which side you're coming from, you might wind up working on one problem first. Okay, so I would look at a, so if you are considering the information integration of the sort that I was describing earlier, basically either the database view or the web service, or the web-oriented view, you could think of at least three general models. I think we already talked about it just now. Three general models for quote-unquote doing integration. Okay, of the data from multiple sources. Okay, one is the search model, where I have a big, you know, hammer which is inverted indices. I'll use them for everything. Okay, so if you have structured data, I'll convert it into HTML pages, index them. Okay, the only interesting difference would be that, you know, if you want to say, for example, author Rao. Okay, then if you're searching for author Rao, that means you're looking for tuples where the author happens to be Rao, not just that the word author occurs and not the word Rao occurs. Okay, to be able to do that, your inverted index should actually not only have links for author, I mean, it should have an entry for author, an entry for Rao, and also an entry for author Rao. Do you understand what I'm saying? When was the last time we saw this? In this class, and you'll be in big trouble with closed book exam and all that. What? No, but this kind of basically to take the structure into account, we are essentially looking at to take the structure into account. We're essentially increasing the amount of indexing. Exactly. Right, remember? So basically, in fact, we even pointed out, I think somebody asked, isn't that the case now that just to exploit the structure, you're increasing the size of the inverted index? Yes. And the same thing we're doing here. Okay, XML querying, we basically were putting path expressions for also being indexed. Right? Okay, so that's the kind of direction where the work goes on. And I might show you a couple of slides later on, but that's basically the kind of direction where the work goes on. So in your inward index, not only as author and Rao, but also author Rao. Okay, and you know, some interesting issues would be to see that, for example, if author and writer have been said to be the same, then you may also want to put writer Rao in the inverted index. So the idea would be that you're still trying to support, in, you know, keyword-based querying, but on structured data, okay, where you'll assume that the users may actually be, for example, using a structure in their queries, mostly for selection, not much more than that. Okay, now, if this looks like a very silly or simple idea, let me point out that, in fact, that's pretty much the state of the art in all the search engines right now. Okay, so because it's so much easier for, you know, Google or some other search engine to have one point of entry, which is this little keyword window, where you put your search keywords and they just answer the queries based on that. Okay, and then they essentially have one single model, which is this inverted index model. Okay, which just increases in size to take into account the structure. Now, of course, certain things cannot be done, but certain things can be done. This is slightly better than just keyword search, but slightly much worse than, for example, let's say the other extreme, which is you convert all the data into a single schema. You write a single schema for all these data sources, convert all the data that you have into this schema, put this into a single database that you store in your backyard. That would be data warehouse. Okay, and then you can answer queries on that data warehouse, you know, just like any database query. You can do aggregate queries, you can do all sorts of things. Okay, of course, that difficulty with this, of course, is you spend a lot of time doing upfront work. Exactly, exactly. We'll see that. So here you have to do very little. Essentially, you don't have to do anything other than increasing the inverted index a little bit more. Even if you don't, that's okay. Okay, so what's the big deal? If you don't put Arthur Rao as one of the entries in the inverted index, you know, it will get you some of the pages where Arthur appears and Rao appears next to each other versus some of the pages where they occur far away from each other. But already proximity search basically prefers pages that where they are close to each other. So it's not going to be that bad. Okay. So this is easy to do, but you don't expect to get much, you know, great semantic answers from this. You can't do joins, you can't do, you know, selections with constraints and so on and so forth. Okay. This one you can do everything, but you spend a lot of time up front. And furthermore, if the data is changing, then there is this issue of maintaining the freshness of the warehouse. How often do you maintain the freshness of the warehouse? Okay. So data warehouse approach is useless for comparison shopping because they keep changing their databases, so you know your data warehouse is already old. Okay. And then the middle one is essentially a mediator architecture, which is what I'll spend more time on because that's the thing that we didn't spend. You know, you would have known how data warehouses work to the extent you know databases. Okay. And you already pretty much know how this works. So the one interesting thing, variation is this online mediator architecture where what you're trying to do is you are providing the user a single point of contact, a mediator, to whom they, to which they can give queries in a centralized schema. Okay. Now all these other sources essentially might have their different schemas. And it's the mediator's responsibility to take the query in the central schema and convert it into the right queries onto all these data sources and execute them and then get the answers back to you. Now, in doing so, of course, you have to assume that earlier on, somehow these data sources registered themselves with the mediator. Or the mediator registered them into it, its mediation architecture, okay, by connecting their schemas to its schema. Now, something as simple as that turns out it actually can have very big differences. You know, how to, for example, how to relate a data source's schema to the mediator schema. It turns out there are very different ways of doing it, and we'll talk about that at some point of time, either at the end of today's class or the beginning of next class. Okay? Yes. Those are all the questions we'll talk about. You know, it depends on if these guys want to be mediated, they will pay, they will provide the data in the correct format. If they don't even know that you exist, then it's your responsibility. Okay. So the question is, are the sources cooperative or autonomous? Well, the question of, yes, but the difference is that this is online. So the point is, it's demand driven, okay? And so it takes into account the freshness of the data because you answer the query when the data was, you know, when the, you know, query was sent to you. And it may not be the case that you really need to copy the entire data sources because maybe nobody will ask queries about how to go from Phoenix to some random city. You understand what I'm saying? So in a data warehouse, you essentially convert everything and put it into one single place. Okay? Again, I think some of that discussion is what we'll actually spend some time talking about in a minute. So, you know, in each of these, I guess, especially in this and this, the main challenges are if the information is not already in a structured fashion, you have to extract it, okay? And then you have to align the sources. That means you have to make their schemas agree. So you have to map the schemas, okay? And then you have to align the data, which is essentially this aligning sources and aligning data. So data might be called, the same car might be called in different names, for example, in which case you want to say it's the same thing. Okay, so for example, author and writer are the same, but that's a schema level heterogeneity. Rao and Subba Rao are the same person. That's data level heterogeneity. Okay, so if you want to take these, if they, these kinds of heterogeneity is present, you have to take that into account, and then you have to do query processing. Okay, and what we'll spend, and we talked about this part already, you know, at least some of the issues involved in extracting information we talked about in the last week. And then I will more or less not cover anything on this, except, for example, talk about two different ways of registering the schemas of individual data sources with the mediated data schema. Okay? And then we'll spend a lot more time on the query processing. Yes, sir?
For WebSQL, who is going to be that mediator? And then has this been done before?
No. See, in fact, one of the interesting points is that for web scale, maybe this is the best thing to do.
But we are talking about information integration of web scale, right?
No. I mean, I would like to dream that way, but I may not have the answer for it.
Yeah, but that would be the role of semantic web, right? To have ontology.
Possibly. Possibly. Okay. But I think it's also the question, in general, these kinds of mediator architectures have been particularly useful in sort of intra-corporate scenarios, where like a corporation has seven different databases, and there is no single view way, you know, the single easy way of combining data from all these sources. In fact, the joke is that one time NSF wanted NSF actually pours a lot of money into science informatics and information integration for research into it. And when they were trying to push for that funding, apparently one of the motivating scenarios was that one day they needed to find out how much money from NSF is going to what are called HBCUs, you know, historically black colleges, you know, black and minority colleges. And this information is there in the NSF databases. But finding it took 1 week. Do you understand what I'm saying? The information is there, but, you know, even at the NSF level, where they are actually sponsoring research, but their own infrastructure is so outmoded that finding an information, you know, answer to a query that exists still took 1 week. Okay, and they wanted this to be done more automatically. So instead of 1 week, maybe 5 days. You know, at least you would have weekend free. And so that's the sort of level at which that's kind of an intra-corporate. So it's like, you know, NSF is not entire web. Okay, that's the kind of places where this has been very useful. At the currently at the web scale, pretty much this is the one that's working. And as Nick pointed out, semantic web essentially, we'll bring that up too, by the way, in aligning sources and aligning data. In fact, semantic web standards can help us. But the question, of course, is we talked about semantic web also having trouble because that requires that people behave and nobody behaves. Okay, that's the scenario for that. That just says that I'll spend most of my time on that middle part because that's the thing that's quite different from the others. Okay. Okay, I don't know why this happened. Okay. This picture is interesting in the sense that one can say this is the sort of point that somebody was making earlier, that in the bottom of that previous picture you had very little work done up front. All the work is done pretty much at the search time. And then at the top, which was the data warehouse, all work was done up front, and at the query time, you basically don't have to do too much work. Another way of actually looking at it is very little semantics are involved in the bottom level because web search does not give answers, it gives pointers to where to find answers. Right? Whereas databases are supposed to give you answers. Okay, so the interesting one way of, so on the other end, in that previous picture, the top, the data warehouse has more semantics, okay? And then it also has much more upfront work. And then the bottom has very little semantics and very little upfront work. Okay, and one can actually imagine that rather than these being competing architectures, these are just a spectrum of architectures where depending on the time that you have, you will slowly make some parts of the architecture more and more warehousey, more and more mediator oriented. So for example, upfront I would say, well, if I'm, you know, Google, then I would say, well, look, you know, I don't quite know that anybody is particularly interested in the ASU data as against the general data of the world. Okay, so I'll just do basic search engine plus this surfacing idea, which is put everything in HTML pages and index them. But then I notice that there are more and more queries, you know, from just on ASU databases. And there's enough number of people who are interested in that. Okay, so one can start slowly saying, well, for that aspect of that part of the data, I can do more semantic integration, provide mediator-oriented integration. Okay, and then if there is so many queries coming on the ASU databases and the ASU databases are not changing too much, then you may as well have a local copy of the ASU database next to you. So in a way, you had a local copy in terms of the index before. Now by the time you come here, you have a local copy in terms of the data itself next to you. Okay, so you could think of going from here to here. For any particular application, you might go from here to here over a period of time based on the demand, based on the kind of queries you are getting, which types of queries are, you know, which parts of the database are exercised more. Okay, and this is just to give you an idea that, you know, they're not, not competing, but they can be quite complementary. And how to do this, how to go from one side to the other side is basically based on learning, adapting yourself to the query stream that's coming. Okay. Now, I want to talk a little, before I go into the specifics of the problems I mentioned, the challenges I mentioned, including the extracting information, aligning sources, and the query processing, I want to talk to you a little bit more about the dimensions of variation, okay? These are things that, you know, I guess once you hear it, you'll realize, yeah, you know, they will change, you know, they will affect the way things are being integrated, okay? And so, of course, those are them. I mean, so the types of data sources, type of integration, level of upfront work, control over sources, type of output expected, and the generality of the solution. Okay. Now, I want to go through them more slowly. So the dimensions of, in terms of the types of data sources being integrated. If data sources are all structured, then pretty much the only reasonable thing that you should focus on is query reformulation, schema mapping, and, you know, optimization of queries. If on the other hand, some of the sources are text oriented, then you would need to do extraction too, right? So you could have fully structured text oriented sources, multimedia sources, mixed, semi-structured sources. And depending on the sources, information integration challenges change. Okay, one of the point of this particular set of slides is that you can pick one from each of these slides and you'll have a scenario for which you can write a paper or you can write a solution. Okay, that's the interesting point. Okay, and then in terms of vertical versus horizontal integration, this I sort of mentioned earlier. Vertical integration essentially means all you are doing is you are taking data from multiple sources, removing the duplicates and collating them. Okay, so the simplest kind of scenario is there are many bibliography sources. You have a single query saying, get me all the papers written by Rao, and so you call all the sources, essentially, for the papers by Rao, now remove the duplicates and show the answer. This is pretty much similar to the meta search engines that used to exist before. And of course, the interesting kinds of challenges there would be if, you know, on the internet, you can always have a simple solution which involves everybody stop doing what you're doing, answer my query. Okay, that's the solution all the time, but it just doesn't work. You know, it works maybe the first time, and after that nobody pays any attention. Okay, so the question would be, if you have many sources, which subset of sources are you going to call to get the most relevant answers for your query, for example? Okay, so source selection becomes, for example, an important issue in vertical data integration. Okay, and in selecting sources, you want to take into account things such as coverage, that is the expected number of answers that this source will have for this query, relevance, that is whether those answers would be relevant or not, okay, and also overlap, which is if I'm giving the same answers that other people gave, then there's no point in calling me. And rather than call and remove duplicates, you want to avoid calling sources that are likely to bring in duplicates. Okay, and so there are interesting issues there. For example, the first source that you want to pick would be the largest source, the one which is supposed to have the maximum number of answers to the query. And the second source is not the second largest source, but rather the source that has the largest number of new results that are not present in the first one. So you need to do residual relevance. Again, a related idea was thought about in the search engines too. You know, the first page is supposed to be the most important, most relevant page. The second page should be the one with the highest residual relevance, because the copy of the first page would still have the same relevance, and you can't just put 10 copies of the first page and assume that that's the top 10 results. Okay, again, there is this idea of residual coverage, and how do you compute the residual coverage? And for that, you need to keep track of the expected overlap between sources. So those are the kinds of issues that come if you are interested in the data aggregation, the vertical or data aggregation sort of information integration. Okay, in the case of horizontal, basically you are taking data tuple from here and essentially joining with tuples from some other source. So you're sort of doing joins as against union. Okay, and the example there essentially are, you know, the ones that you know well are things like mashups, which take information from one and then put it into another. I mean, there are like so many Google Map mashups, right? All of which are mashups because, you know, they will take one piece of information, plug it into Google Maps, and then show you some results. Okay. Challenges in those, you know, horizontal integration will be how to efficiently handle joins in terms of this particular dimension. Okay. Notice that all these dimensions are there, and then a point would be an information integration scenario would be either vertical or horizontal or both, and may also have structured or text-oriented or both sources. So these are independent dimensions almost. Okay. The other one is level of upfront work versus pre-orchestrated mediation. Okay. So one extreme is mashups, since we're just talking about mashups. Mashups are information integration. But essentially, they do one thing, that's it. Like, I mean, there's so many Google Map mashups where, for example, if you give the flight number, they'll show you where the flight is on the Google Earth. But that's the only thing they'll do. If you give the flight number, they won't tell you, you know, for example, you know, other things such as what is its capacity, for example. Who made that particular plane that corresponds to that flight right now? Those kinds of questions are not answered. Okay, it's made for one very specific query, and it's just pre-orchestrated upfront. Okay, on the other extreme, this is the blue sky. This is the one that NSF wanted when it had this historically black colleges query. What they want to do really is get a query from the user on the mediator schema, go discover the relevant data sources. Just as you discover relevant pages, instead you now discover the relevant data sources on demand. Okay, and then figure out their schemas. Okay, and then map the schemas onto the mediator schema, and then reformulate the user query into the individual source queries. Answer the query, give it to the user back. This would be everything done at the query time. Okay, clearly this is going to be more flexible. So if there are more sources that are coming in, you know, from yesterday till today, then this will take care of it. But then it spends a lot of time during the query time. Okay, and this one, it's just sort of a snapshot in the world. You know, it took one particular for one particular query, it decided here is the way to answer it using a mashup. Okay, and really the interesting action is all sort of in between. And what we will be looking at would be scenarios, for example, where you know the mediator schema, you know some of the sources, you know all the sources that are sort of registered. And then given a query, you're trying to figure out which subset of them to call and what would be the query on the sources, given that this is the query on the mediator schema. Okay, so that would be where most of the interesting action right now is. And then one end is the blue sky and one end is completely doable. Mashups can be done. For each query, you have a separate information integration system. Okay. The other dimension is control over sources. Does the mediator have control over sources? This was again a question that we talked about earlier. Okay. If you have a control over sources, then you can ask them, you can expect them to do lots and lots of things. You can expect them to register themselves with you. So you don't need to register the sources yourself, you know, they will register themselves onto your schema. Or they will provide metadata, like for example, semantic web standards based metadata that will make the registration much simpler. Okay, furthermore, they will also provide unrestricted access to the data sources because they are under your control. They'll essentially, you say, give me all your data which has the following. You know, for example, you can say, give me all your books which have more than 785 pages and less than 793 pages. And you should be able to answer that. If it's a fully relational database under your control, that there is an answer to it. Amazon, unfortunately, won't answer it to you. But inside Amazon, there may be an mediator where that can actually answer, get the question, get the answer for that. Right? So the point is that if it is cooperative, then a whole bunch of information is directly available to the mediator, and it just needs to use it. If it's not cooperative, that information needs to be learned by hook or crook, by the mediator. Okay, including the schema registration, including the statistics. So for example, if you want to know approximately how many answers are likely to be present for this query in this source. Okay, those are usual database statistics. And for example, how many tuples is this tuple likely to join in the other data source? Those are the selectivity statistics. And if it's your database, it'll provide it to you. If it's somebody else's database, you need to learn them yourself, you the mediator. And in all this discussion, you are the mediator. Okay? So most current integration scenarios really are more like this. Okay, and so you need to learn all this information, including the source statistics. And then finally, type of output. Maybe this should have been in the very beginning. Are you expecting pointers where answers might be there if you read it in English, or are you expecting answers themselves? That's a big difference, because if you're doing indexing methods, then all you can expect is pointers to where answers might live. Okay. So this is more of a requirement from the problem side, okay? And then, in fact, from the this is also an interesting picture to keep in mind. I mentioned the semantic versus. If you're thinking in terms of administrative proximity, which is the level of control you have over a source, okay? And so the previous two slides, one of which was about essentially, this one is about control over the sources, okay? The next one is more about semantics of the answers. If all you need to provide is pointers, and whether or not there are answers there would be decided by the user who looks at it. And you have no requirement in ensuring that the answers are answers. Then you have no major semantic requirements from the mediator point of view. Okay, so if you put these two together, actually, if you here are interesting names that you know of and how they fall in this spectrum. Okay, so for example, administrative proximity, your ability to control near and far. That means near means you can control, far means you can't control. Okay, and semantic integration, high means essentially you are giving answers, not pointers. Low means there really is no there, and all you can expect is pointers to the files that might mean something to the users. Okay, so given that, web search, for example, falls there, because you have no control over other people's pages, and there is no semantics that you can provide with respect to them. Okay, and database management systems fall here, because normal database management systems, you have complete control over them, and they have semantics. You know the schema. Okay, and as you go, for example, data integration systems, they are a little less near because some of the sources may be at least providing the schema but may not be providing the statistics. And then, you know, the semantics also might be different to some extent, in the sense it's not as high semantic level of integration, because the schema mapping may not be completely foolproof. Okay? So this picture is sort of worth looking at once in a while. Okay? So for example, something like a virtual organization or the intra-corporate data source integration would fall here. Okay, because you still have, you know, basically databases. They're not web pages. So they have semantics in terms of the schema. Okay, so this is, earlier I was just talking about multiple different dimensions, and this picture is, if you just take two dimensions and project all the things into those two dimensions, two-dimensional plane, you know, here's how they might start looking. Okay. So what we will be looking at, as I mentioned, is, having said all this, what I will look at is the source mediator model, you know, not the indexing one, not much, because we already know approximately all you need to know about it, and not the data warehouse model, because in essence it's databases, plus whatever else we learn here in terms of, you know, actually mapping schemas. Okay. So if I focus on this, then essentially I would have given you the challenges for the other ones too, some of the solutions for the challenges for the other ones too. Okay. So here is the expectation that we have in this sort of a architecture for integration. That means you have multiple sources out there, and there is a single schema that is available to the user. Okay, and on which they are making, you know, currently we'll assume SQL is the greatest thing in the world. So they'll just provide SQL or XQuery queries on this particular schema. And then, in essence, this mediator then converts this query into the right queries onto them, takes the answers back, combines them correctly, and gives the answers. So as far as this guy is concerned, he's talking to a single database with a single schema. And the mediator makes sure, and the mediator is sort of outsourcing some of the queries. Okay? And then they, at the time of the query, based on the query, you just send some of the, you know, you ask each of these sources the relevant reformulated query. Now, nothing stops me from saying that the mediator can also have a local cache. Okay, that's completely fine. So for example, one thing that to improve the efficiency the mediator might have, apart from these sources, there is a special source which is sort of before here. And that is essentially some of the data it has brought in previously and kept, and, you know, kept locally in its own mediator schema model. Okay, and in fact, one idea would be that when a new query comes, first give answers from the cache. And then, while people are looking at them, then get extra answers from the actual sources. Now, of course, this would not necessarily work, in fact, if the sources were changing, and so the cache data is stale. So if you want to keep a cache, you also need to have a way of keeping the freshness of the cache. Okay? And, you know, but it's not, this view is not antagonistic to having a cache next to you. Okay, and if you have it at all, you would have basically that cache in terms of the mediator schema itself, because what else would you do? You know, it makes sense to, you know, if you already brought in the data, you may as well put it in your local proprietary format. Okay? And so the thing, of course, is that for the mediator to send queries onto the sources, then the important thing, of course, is other than the cache, which is also can be thought of as a specialized source, okay? Data doesn't reside at the mediator, it resides in the sources. Okay? And if in fact all the data is only in the cache, then it's just a special case where there are no other sources. Okay? And the question then becomes, how to do this sort of rewriting of the queries, you need at least the ability to relate the schema of the sources to the schema of the mediator. And once you do that, then you need, you know, you need a way of rewriting the query on the mediator schema into the query on the source schema. When did we talk about reformulation in this class? The last time. query. Remember, we talked about databases with multiple databases with their own proprietary formats, right? If they can all provide an XQuery, an XML front end, by essentially taking queries in the XQuery format, converting them into SQL format, and then when the data comes out, tagging it as XML. In essence, that's sort of doing some of these things, not all of these, but some of those things. Okay, and remember I told you that in that case too, that a single query might actually become multiple queries. A single XQuery query might become multiple SQL queries. And this becomes even more interesting here, for example, because as I said, in fact, if you don't have full control over a database, then basically that means that it does not answer all the queries that it can answer, but it won't answer it for you. An example, a classic example is the number of pages. Okay, give me all the books which have exactly 785 pages. Amazon won't answer it. Does that mean you can't get the answer? Of course not. You make infinite number of queries. Okay, make up titles, send it to the data in Amazon until it shuts your IP, and when it shuts your IP, when it blacklists it, you use your friend's IP, or make dynamically new IP, keep sending them queries, right? If your life depends on it, you keep sending them new titles, and they will keep giving you books. And you could care less about the rest of the book. All you care is the number of pages. If it is 785, it's a good thing. You'll keep it. Now here, I took, and this is actually what happened here, is that you rewrote a query, essentially, a single query, into potentially infinite number of reformulated queries. Okay, and it's a union of infinite number of reformulated queries. Or if you know something about deductive databases, it's just a single recursive query. All you need is take a title, call Amazon. Okay, now I need a title. If I gave you some titles up front, then those are titles. And then whenever you call for one title, Amazon will try to sell you some other books. Take all those titles too. Those are new titles now. So you have recursively defined a closure on the titles in Amazon. Okay, so there's a little recursive program which keeps producing titles, which are then being fed into this query. That's why, if you unwind it, there'll be infinite number of queries. The reason I brought this up is actually it's like the most telling example of how a reformulated query might be much larger. You can't just, you no longer get to say, I don't know, it cannot be answered. I mean, you can say it, but to say it and be sure is hard. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so if you are trying to provide completeness guarantees, that means if there is a way of finding the answer, I will find it. Then this is one way of finding the answer. This is not illegal yet, okay, until they blacklist your IP. And until then, you can do this. Okay, and you can think of smaller versions of this where you would do this too. Right? Okay, so again, to be able to do that kind of a reformulation, you need to have an idea of how the source schemas are connected to the mediator schemas. And to some extent, that's mostly the main topic we'll talk about now. Before that, I just want to go through the structure of the overall tutorial that I was talking about and which parts I will focus on and which parts I won't focus on because I already discussed them. Okay. So to be able to do this architecture, you need source descriptions. Okay, sources have to be described, and the point, of course, is how do you describe sources? You need all these kinds of information. Okay, logical source content, books, new cars, etc. Source capabilities. Can it answer all SQL queries? Can it only answer a subset of SQL queries? In fact, one of the interesting scenarios is the fact that Amazon doesn't allow you to ask queries based on one of the attributes of the database. If you share a relational database, you should be able to select on every attribute. The fact that Amazon won't allow you to ask based on the page numbers means it has a binding restriction for the query. It does not allow certain variables to be bound. And similarly, it may also not allow certain variables not to be bound. both are possible. Okay, so for example, I can't ask Amazon, just give me your books, right? Where I'm not even asking pages should be 750. Just give me your books, which is everything free. They'll say sorry, because you should at least bind one guy, which is the author name, or you know, one of the allowed ones, you know, author name or the title or something has to be bound. Okay, so you may need to know that sources have these kinds of binding restrictions. If the source actually, one of the interesting things is the source binding restrictions are just the qualitative versions of a more quantitative idea, that sources might be answering certain types of queries much faster than other types of queries. Okay, so in a way what you need is latency information. If I ask you this query, would you ever get back to me in a reasonable amount of time? That is also part of the information about the source. Source completeness. Does it have all the books in computer science? Does it have all the movies of Woody Allen? Or does it have only some of them? Okay, now the interesting question is, who would give this? Again, all of this information, if I have it, I can improve the query processing. Okay, now if they are cooperative sources, they will just come out and tell you. If they are uncooperative sources, either they'll say, you know, go jump, or they will give you untruthful completeness assertions. Is there any source out there, any movie source out there which says, oh, I don't give you all the movies? No. It will say, everybody says we give you all the movies. Everybody says we give you the world's books. Everybody says, you know, they don't just say the books that, you know, are only made in southwestern United States. Right? So, in a way, if they don't, if you cannot depend upon them being a cooperative source, then you need to learn the completeness assertions yourself, automatically. Okay? Physical properties of the source and network, such as the latency, the network times, you know. Because why? Because certain sources might be in South Korea, certain sources might be in you know, Mexico, and if it is in the middle of the night in North America, then you probably want to call the Mexico source because it's likely to get back to you faster. Okay. Whereas if it is the middle of the day, South Korean source might come back faster. Okay, those kinds of things, you know, if you have the information about the network, you know, you can optimize the queries better. Okay, statistics is about the data, including selectivity statistics, some of the completeness information, some of the overlap information. Source reliability and trustworthiness. One of the biggest problems, and in fact, you know, this is like very much fresh in my mind because one of my students is working on this right now, is if you have large number of sources and they all give you information and it's wrong, you won't know that it's wrong. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I desperately need to find out who is the director of Godfather. So I give the, you know, query, and then this thing comes back and says, sure, Woody Allen made Godfather. And then it gives very convincing details. How do I know? Do you understand what I'm saying? So in fact, trustworthiness. Trust is not something that you can decide by just looking at the answer. If so, then you don't need trust. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so in fact, to compute trustworthiness of a source, you need to use like essentially a more global measure. For example, on the Amazon marketplace, there are all these aggregated trust metrics where everybody who's happy with the way this particular seller sent them the books, they'll go put the 5 stars or 1 star, and that's how you get the trust. Okay? And if there is that part of that kind of information is not available, you need to find out novel ways of computing trustworthiness of a source. Okay? If you want to use it, because here is a source that's extremely fast, but it's full of junk information. What do I do? Right? Source and the reliability, of course, is a different issue, which is, you know, it's down most of the time. And then source overlap is important too, because if there are mirror sources, then essentially you need to know that so that if, in fact, you need one source that's in Korea, then there's a mirror here locally, you'll call it. And if you already called this, then you don't need to call that anymore because it's going to give the same exact information. Okay? And then also things like update frequency, which is essentially the freshness of the data. All of these are source descriptions. And if it's cooperative source, I mean, for each of these, you should be able to understand how you could use to improve the query processing. It's not too hard. Okay? And if it's a cooperative source, it might provide all of this, depending upon the degree of cooperativeness. Okay? And if it's not cooperative, you need approaches for assessing them yourself, you the mediator. So you can write, you know, the algorithms for computing the change frequency, computing the overlap, computing the reliability, computing the trustworthiness, everything. Okay? So it's like all of those are papers that you can write. Some of them exist, some don't. Okay? But that's the kind of open-endedness there. And as I said earlier here, either it's available or you learn this information. But if it's available, I mean, but ultimately, whether you got, whichever way you get it, the mediator can use them to improve the query process. Okay, source access, how do I get the tuples? Okay, and so many sources give unstructured outputs, and so in essence, you need to destructure, you need to put the structure back, you need to wrap them back into the original structure. Okay, and this was, the whole thing was discussed as part of the information extraction. Okay? Source and data alignment. This is one thing that we didn't discuss too much, so I will discuss it in this slide, but it requires actually much longer discussion than that, but I'll do at least this much. Okay? So in the case of source data alignment, basically you need to align the source description because they might have different schemas and you need to align them. Okay. In what would happen next, I would assume that the alignment is provided. And then it would still be interesting how to do reformulation. Okay, so one way of doing it would be that I provide the mediator and I also align the source schema onto the mediator schema. So I verify it. But if you want it to be a completely ad hoc information integration, and by the way, the word ad hoc is bad in most scenarios, but in the integration scenario, ad hoc information integration is great. Which means right after you see the query, you basically get a bunch of usual suspects, and then the sources, the relevant sources, find out their statistics, find out everything, and then send the queries to them. That's ad hoc information integration. That's the holy grail in this case. Nobody uses ad hoc anything to be the holy grail of a field. But in information integration, ad hoc information integration is the holy grail. Okay? So the thing is that you need to be able to, I would assume that, in what happens after this slide, I will assume that somebody already provided the mapping between the source schema and the mediator schema. And it turns out there are interesting questions there. But before you get there, if nobody wants to give it to you and you want to provide a fully automated ad hoc information integration scenario, then you need to do the schema mapping yourself. You the mediator. And there are two ways of doing it. And of course, data mapping also needs to be done sometimes. So for example, Rao and Subbarao are the same, and you need to realize that. Okay. The problems for both are very similar. The challenges for both of them are very similar. Okay. The interesting point is that there are two types of solutions. Solution one is semantic web. The idea is that if I called myself, in my database, I have called this field writer, then I am supposed to say writer is a form of author. And then somebody else calls it book writer. And then they will say book writer is a form of author. Then I say, oh, you and I are same. That's the inference you get to do if you have the background knowledge. If everybody says what their terms mean, then you can infer which terms are connected to which. In fact, you could even say that in these kinds of schema mappings, the simplest kind of schema mappings, each particular attribute corresponds to one single attribute in the other schema. That's just a simple scenario. There can be complex mappings where, for example, one database gives the number of employees and the average salary of the employees. Another database keeps each employee and their salary. Okay, in this company one, you have each employee and their salary given. Company two database, it just gives the number of employees and their average salaries. It turns out you can merge these, essentially. Once you realize that the number of employees times the average is equal to the total salary here. right? That's a complex mapping. Now that's harder essentially to capture. Okay, again, if you have background knowledge, you can provide that. Currently, even if you are not interested in web and database, you know, even if you're not interested in web, database people by themselves realize that this is a huge problem. Okay, there is no such thing as a schema for a database. If I tell you the problem that I'm trying to model, and I ask you all to come up with the schemas, you will come up with 35 schemas. So why do you expect that companies are any different? Okay, so people, in fact, there are people, there is one other word, by the way, I meant to mention, called exact information integration. And this is, we don't particularly care about exact anything on the web. You know, we are happy to get something, okay? But if you are a database person, and you are actually getting exact answers on single databases, and you have multiple databases, and you want to get exact answers on these multiple databases together, you want guarantees that once you, after this mapping, then if you do this query processing, this query reformulation, it's exact answer. Okay, there are some people who are interested in that. So they are, under no conditions are they willing to sacrifice the exactness of the answer. Okay, that's a very small subset, and in fact, there's only one guy that I know of, but he's a pretty big guy, Phil Bernstein, at Microsoft Research, has been going on and on for a large number of years about the importance of what he calls model management, which is if there are multiple schemas, how to map them, how to provide mapping, how to do semi-automated mapping of sources. Now, of course, we are much more blue-eyed, I mean, blue-sky kind of people, and we are interested in either semantic web-based standards, which will allow this, if everybody does their bit, then you can do the mapping as an inference. Or if that doesn't happen, we will actually use learning techniques. Now, of course, all bets are off when you do learning techniques. You know, exact and learning don't go well, especially schema mapping scenario. But, you know, it's better than nothing. Okay, and what kind of machine learning techniques do you use to map schemas onto each other? That's again an interesting cottage industry of sorts. And in fact, the only Turing Award, I'm sorry, not Turing Award, only ACM Distinguished Dissertation Award for database people that was given ever was given for a thesis which essentially did learning techniques for schema mapping. Okay. And I have this, my own theory, that ACM basically gives these awards only for theory people because they don't get jobs afterwards. And so they at least get an award. And they decided to give this guy because although it's a good work, it turns out that it captures both machine learning and databases. So now they don't have to give awards for machine learning and databases for the next 10 years. So next 10 years, you'll still get theory awards. But anyway, the interesting point is there is that particular thesis, all it does is it essentially uses a battery of techniques for saying this attribute might actually correspond to this attribute. And it does ensemble learning techniques to decide which is actually, you know, which mappings are the most likely ones. And one of the battery of learning techniques they use, you can understand quite easily, okay? Which is string similarity. Right, that would be one learner. Okay, if the names are very close in terms of string similarity, maybe you're talking about the same thing. And you can have another learner which says, well, this and this seem to be connected through WordNet. Okay, I could have another third learner where, for example, you'd say that if you take all the values under this writer column, take it as a bag of words, all the values under the author column, take it as a bag of words, take the similarity between them. If it's high, that means they're right. They're basically talking about the same thing. How many of you think that this is a foolproof approach? So if in fact this column says dead and says yes means it's dead, okay? And this column says alive and says yes means it's alive. What would be the bag similarity between these two bags? One. So you say dead and alive, it's the same. You know, which isn't exactly the correct thing. But the point is, all of these are fallible learners. All of these are fallible learners, and you have multiple, you know, ways of trying to say this corresponds to this, and then you use ensemble learning techniques to figure out what's the best mapping. And those would still be wrong, but at least you are no longer dependent on people. Okay, it's a very, you know, big area right now. There's not that much great theory there, but it's important. It needs to be done. Okay, and then this one is very much dependent on people behaving, and you know how that goes. You know, people don't behave. Okay, so even though I'll add a slide expanding this to talk about the three techniques I showed you about schema mapping, so that you'll at least feel that you know some ideas for schema mapping. But then you use all of them to be, you know, together as an ensemble learning technique. Okay, they are slightly better ideas too, but mostly that's where you're going. Okay. So what we will do when we come back next class, essentially, is that. So the previous several slides essentially talked about the phases: source description, source access, and source data alignment, and now query processing. There I'll spend more time, mostly, you know, the 3.5 minutes now and then the rest of the next class. Okay. So it turns out that the query processing techniques, again, the more interesting questions are, again, I'll focus mostly on the mediator model. Okay. Upfront, I will assume and spend more time on, you know, fully structured databases and people asking exact queries. Okay. Each of the data sources, they're all basically, they have no null values, they are not unclean, they are, you know, they are clean databases and fully structured. Might have different schemas. Okay, and then we'll understand how to design a mediator, how to do reformulation of queries, how to access sources, and how to collect results there. And then we will realize, time permitting, hopefully, either toward the end of next class or definitely part of the last class, I'll point out that if a user on the web has, you know, basically thinks that 2 keywords should be enough for anybody to figure out what exactly they are looking for. Okay. Would they suddenly become much more well-behaved and write 5-line SQL queries because you tell them, no, I'm no longer a Google, I am a structured database? They don't change. They say, whatever you want to be, it's fine, but I still have these 2 keywords. Okay? So if the users have no clue as to what they're looking for to begin with, and they were asking imprecise queries when they thought they were talking to Google, they will still do that when they're talking to a mediator. So you need to support imprecise queries and in the context of databases. And similarly, the data sources, they don't have to be clean. They may actually have all sorts of problems in terms of maybe part of these data sources were extracted. So they're actually probably stick tuples. That means this tuple may or may not exist. Or there may be null values in the tuple. And when you start taking those into account, then in essence you realize that even if you don't have a mediator, even if you just have a single database on the web that people can query, then essentially you need to wind up worrying about information retrieval type of ideas in the context of databases. And that will be the last thing I'll talk about, you know, when we come back. So I think I'll stop here. Next class, we'll start talking about basically the reformulation in the general model, and then we will also talk about some of the more advanced issues. Stop.